returns to the totality. The realization of the totality. I think now the word realization is becoming a little more real to us, yes? It's not as though I am going to have some kind of funny vision. But that it is already there, it is all there. This is the totality. The totality has sort of created within itself, because there can be nothing outside this totality. The totality has, as it were, created a diversity within itself in order to experience its own bliss, its own sweetness. The realization of this is the goal of bhakti, is bhakti. So, now this word realization is getting into trouble. Omnipotence is inherent in this cosmic being. Bliss is inherent in this cosmic being, just as bliss is inherent in your sleep state. Do I realize it? In other words, while you are asleep, do you realize you are in bliss, in great peace, in great joy? No. So, in order to realize, you wake up. My God, ruined. In order to realize the bliss that is inherent in you, you wake up. That is the first aspect of bhakti, the division. And then from then on, you are looking for the same bliss, the same peace. Till once again, you realize it has been there all the time. I made a mistake asking for it. That's all. The cosmic being realizing its bliss, wishing to realize its bliss, creates the division. And the divided thing, endeavoring to realize it, endeavoring to recapture that bliss, realizes it has been always there. The end and the beginning are simultaneous. That whole process is called bhakti. The whole thing is called bhakti. From realization to realization. It is not as though we are jumping from ignorance to enlightenment. No, no, no. It is from enlightenment to enlightenment. It's a cyclic motion. It is a cyclic motion or a spiral motion. The thing being the same. From that point, how blissful am I? How powerful am I? When the question arises, there the spiral is formed. Till it realizes that I am not outside this totality. And then the whole game comes to an end. And that's called bhakti. As I said, there is a little text called Narada Bhakti Sutras. It's a beautiful, lovely little text, which is regarded almost as a textbook for devotion, bhakti. A very significant feature in it is that the word God is not specifically used nor described. Even the word Ishvara occurs once or twice. The word that is used throughout is that Sattva Asmin Paramaprema Rupa Tat, that or Asmin, in it, in that. What is bhakti, what is love, what is devotion? Sa, that devotion to asmin parama prema rupa. Asmin, towards that parama prema, supreme devotion, supreme affection. Prema is intense love, intense affection. Intense affection for that is bhakti. What is that? Oh, I don't know. You look for it yourself. It is not a ready-made, that's what I'm trying to suggest. It is not a sort of ready-made God with 6 eyes and 4 arms and 15 noses and that sort of thing, which you are supposed to love. No, no. There is something within you on with which is also omnipresent, which towards which the mind naturally flows, is the cosmic being. Ishvara means is, it is. What is? When what appears to be has been reduced to what is, that is Isha, Ishvara, God. And there is the mind and your heart and your whole being naturally flow towards this. That towards which your whole being naturally flows with intense longing, yearning. That is God. And that natural yearning or longing is bhakti. All else is emotionalism. Sātu asmin parama prema rūpa. Amrita-swarūpācha. And that again is of the nature of immortality, eternity, infinity. It is undying. This love is undying because the thing that, towards which it is directed is undying, and that from which it springs is undying. When we say, I love you, etc., etc., I disappear in 10 days and you disappear in 15 days, what is I love you? Rubbish. But there, in the case of bhakti, in the case of devotion, or love of God, love of the omnipresent, love of the eternally existent, that from which this love arises is eternal, that towards which it is directed is eternal, and therefore it itself is eternal. Sātvasmin parama prema rupa amrita swarupacha. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna widens this definition a lot more. Again, on the analogy of the waking, the man waking up, and then what happens if half a dozen of us are lying in this room and all of us wake up at the same time? All of us are looking for the same thing, basically, yes? We all want to be happy. There's no doubt about that. But as soon as we wake up, if you watch, what are your first thoughts? You are looking for happiness. But your definition of happiness is quite different from her definition of happiness. Or your approach to happiness, rather, is quite different from her approach to happiness. You are probably looking for somebody. She is probably looking for something else. He is probably looking for something else. He is thinking of how to make more money. She is thinking of her children. You are thinking of the ashram. Somebody, maybe an alcoholic, as soon as he wakes up, he says, the arm reaches out. Where is it? But there is one thing in common in all of them, and that is they are all looking for happiness. There's a beautiful verse in the Gita, Chaturvidha Bhajande Mam Jana Sukrutino Arjuna. Whereas others have tried to belittle the alcoholic or the money grabber or the sensualist, Krishna says, okay, don't worry them. Don't worry them. They're all on the same path, on the same road. Only you may be a little ahead of the queue, or the other man may be further behind. They're all seeking happiness. Artho, Jignyasur, Artharthi, Jnani. There are four types of devotees. Four types of people think of God, contemplate, meditate God, pray. Artha, one who is sick, in pain. He wants relief from pain and he prays to God for relief from pain. Jignyasu, one who is curious, who wants to know, students like us. We may or may not be deeply involved in the practice of yoga, but we want to know a little more about it. Artharthi, one who wants money. Maybe money to fulfill his need or desires, whatever it is. That's not discussed here. One who seeks wealth also prays. One who seeks health also prays. One who seeks knowledge also prays. And then there is the other person who is a jnani. He knows the truth. And he says, I am caught. There is no sense in asking why. He says, I don't know why I pray. I don't know why I meditate at all. I don't know why I love God. What do you mean why? I'm in it. I am in the soup. So whether I stick my tongue out or stick my ear out, it's all full of soup. So there is no why here. It is he who realizes that it is inevitable that eventually the heart must love God, because that is why the whole creation has been brought about. And there are a few other statements in the Gita which are also interesting in this connection. Whatever you pray for, whatever you wish to attain, it is that cosmic being that brings it about, gives it to you. Where does it come from? From God. All that we experience is from God. All that we do is from God. The same energy dancing around, that is what makes all things possible. One who realizes it is spontaneously involved in this devotion. One who does not, he thinks otherwise, but thinking otherwise does not alter the nature of truth. The wave is water, the wave is the lake. It's non-different from the lake. It is not independent of the lake. Even if the wave thinks it is independent. But right in the beginning, we get a beautiful vision of bhakti, that it is intense longing for that here standing for God, or cosmic consciousness, cosmic being, anything. That is the point. That which is